You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Humberto Juarez Rocha, and I'll be your host today on this episode of Opus Talks. I was a carbon price reporter at Opus for 3.5 years, covering the cap and trade systems in Europe, which is namely the UK emissions trading system and the European Union's emissions trading system. The purpose of these systems is to essentially put a price on every metric ton of carbon emitted and to cap the amount of carbon that industry and other sectors are allowed to put out into the atmosphere. As a market mechanism, the EU ETS and the UK ETS should encourage covered sectors to decarbonize as, by design, the amount of carbon allowances will dwindle over the coming years, pushing up the price of carbon and incentivizing companies to lower their carbon intensity. At Opus, we've been assessing the price of EU and UK carbon for years through our Global Carbon Market Report, and we're also offering forecasted prices for both the EU and UK markets through Comiro, in addition to subnational US markets. It's my pleasure to dive deeper today into the European carbon markets with our guest, Guadalupe Ruiz, our principal carbon markets analyst who is based in Barcelona and who hails from Buenos Aires. Guadalupe, bienvenida al podcast. Welcome to the podcast. Before you tell us a bit about yourself and your background, is it true that your doctoral thesis was on applied physics?
Hola, Humberto, and hi, everyone, and thanks so much for having me. That's basically true. I studied physics back in Argentina in the University of Buenos Aires and then moved to Barcelona for PhD in computational and applied physics. And then I joined Dow Jones about 7 years ago. I first started as a data scientist focusing on ESG. And this is what gave me the technical assessment and also the sustainability background, which then, got me into carbon markets, where I have been with Comiro for a year and a half, as you were just saying, and, forecasting and also covering the analysis for the EU and UK ETS.
It's amazing, Wella, and it's been a pleasure to work with you over the last couple of years during our time here at Opus. Learning more about carbon, analyzing all the movements, volatility. And, you know, as you're part of the Comiro team, I really wanted to ask, what have been the top three trends that you saw over 2025 affecting the price of EUAs, EU carbon allowances?
Well, I mean, it has been quite a ride, I would say. We saw a clear shift between the first 6 months of the year and the second semester. In a nutshell, I would say that the three trends that were the most relevant were, firstly, the tracking of natural gas prices. Then we saw tariffs and trade policy uncertainty taking a toll on the price of EUAs. And then on the second semester, we saw investment funds taking the front seats and with the expectation of tighter supply in 2026, driving prices higher. But if you want, I can dive deeper into this.
About the story from behind your perspective, what you've been seeing in these three trends. Yes.
All right. So firstly, on the natural gas front, there's a key mechanism. Let me state this for the audience who may not be familiar with it, that is called coal to gas switching. And this refers to when power plants choose between coal and natural gas, depending on fuel and carbon costs. So coal emits roughly twice as much CO2 as natural gas. So using coal is cheaper only if EUA prices are low enough. And when natural gas is cheaper or EUA prices are high, plants switch to natural gas. This, of course, affects EUA demand because more coal means more EUA demand. And this is something that we saw very clearly on January last year. We had in Europe very cold weather, unusually cold weather, low wind output, and the continued hold of Russia-Ukraine gas, natural gas transit. And all of this made natural gas prices surge. And due to this, coal was in the money back then. And this translated into EUA prices going from 74 euros per metric ton to 84 euros per metric ton between, well, among the last 20 days of January. But this trend reversed soon after when we saw the discussions between US and Russia raising expectations of a potential easing of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And what we think is that market participants were speculating with the possibility of the return of natural gas pipeline flows into Europe, which means cheaper natural gas. And this translated into EUA prices declining. The correlation that we saw between TTF, which is the benchmark price for natural gas in Europe, and EUAs was very high throughout the first half of the year. When I say very high, I mean 0.7. This is a number that goes between 0 and 1, so 0.7 is quite high. But we have seen a change in this traditional correlation throughout the year since then. In September, we saw that it went down to 0, and it had previously stood between 0.7 and 0.9 earlier in the year. And there's an interesting story behind this change. And in a nutshell, the punchline is that we think that the power sector is no longer the primary driver of EUA demand. And the reason for this is that the power sector is decarbonizing, right? So as we know, renewables, especially wind and solar, have become economically competitive. Last year, for instance, wind and solar generated a record 30% of EU electricity, which is more than fossil generation for the first time. And coal has also been phased out. It was phased out in the UK since 2024. And in the EU, coal generation has, well, it's on continued steep decline, right? So what I'm trying to say is that natural gas to coal switching is having a smaller role. And in turn, the renewable output is a key factor now, right? So when the sun shines or when the wind blows, renewables generate electricity first, and natural gas plants adjust to fill in the gaps. So that is on the natural gas front. So if we still have time, I can dig into tariffs and the investment funds impact as well.
I know obviously tariffs and trade policy have caused significant changes over the past year, as well as investment funds. Yes, absolutely. How have you seen these two weather?
Yeah. So as I was just saying, we first saw EUA prices first increasing because of increasing TTF prices, so natural gas prices, then declining because in January last year, because of the speculation of easing tensions between Russia and Ukraine. And when we were in that movie at that point, on April 2nd, we saw the US announcing the US tariffs on EU imports, and well, around the world, but in particular targeting this market on EU imports. And this included industrial goods such as steel and aluminium. And this translated into a sharp decline in EUA prices that same day. And of course, this effect lingered for some time. The logic here is that market participants were anticipating weaker global economic outlook and reduced industrial activity, which would imply lower demand for carbon allowances. However, soon after, we saw a pause in the EU tariffs and concerns eased later in 2025 as the negotiations progressed. But nevertheless, trade policy remains. I mean, it is still today a source of uncertainty for EUA demand, like we recently saw. So today is 24th of February. So last Friday, we saw the Supreme Court of the United States striking down some key global tariffs imposed by Trump. The administration introduced new temporary import levies, and in response, the EU has paused the work on the planned EU-US trade agreement. So this is, of course, increasing policy uncertainty, and is a hot topic that we need to keep a close eye on. But this changed last year around mid-August when we saw investment funds taking the front seat on EUA price formation. The reasons behind this were, well, firstly, the expectation of a tighter allowance of supply in 2026. And also there was some compliance deadline, right? So deadline for EUAs is now September. So then at the beginning of September, we see some ramping up in demand because of this as well. So this was the beginnings of the significant tightening of the EUA market in the second half of 2025. And it has been quite steep, I would say. So investment funds sharply increased their net long positions. They grew from 1.6 million EUAs to give you an idea, to paint the picture, right? So right after the tariff agreement, they were on April 11 at 1.6 million EUAs, and they increased to 116.2 million EUAs at the end of December. So which is approximately 70 times an increase, and the level at which they got in December was back then the highest historical level recorded at that point. This, of course, was translated into bullish EUA prices, right? This surge in positioning was driven by this expected reduction in EUA supply in 2026. And let me tell you a little bit of where we stand now with this and why we are speaking of reduction of supply, right? So firstly, we have a cap tightening of 4.3%, which is represented by the linear reduction factor. And then on top of that, this year, we have a one-off reduction of 27 million allowances, which was introduced under the revised EU ETS directive in 2023. So together, all of these factors have created expectations of a structurally tighter market, which is what we're seeing as well. And this is what is driving net long positions to unprecedented levels, which were already the highest level recorded at the end of 2025, and that then continued increasing this year.
Very interesting, Guada. And thank you for telling us a bit more about the different factors that you have to keep in mind, whether that's tariffs from the US, changes in trade policy, investment funds, and the decoupling between natural gas and EUA prices. It's all been very, very interesting, and learning about how these dynamics are not only shaping the market, but the dynamics themselves are changing as we enter 2026. And now that we are 2 months into 2026, I wanted to ask, what movements have you seen in the EU carbon market over the last 2 months or since the beginning of 2026?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question, because the market has significantly shifted since the start of the year. So as I was just saying, the second half of the year, of last year, 2025, from July to mid-January, we saw very steep and I would say almost linear upward trend. So EUA prices went from 70 euros per ton to around 91 euros per ton in 6 months, which represents a 30% increase. And then we saw this year that this trend got reversed. So first, prior to that, they reach long positions by investment funds reach 126 million in mid-January, which is 7 times what they held in July and an all-time high for UTS. But then the tables turn soon after that. And around January 16, with investment funds taking profit as market sentiment weakened. So this is what we are thinking is a regime change, at least from sustained bullish momentum to a period of correction, right? And the reason for this was the market had been overbought for several months, according to our technical analysis. For instance, if we look at the Bollinger Bands, we can see that EUAs were surfing the upper Bollinger Band for more than 6 months over the last year, suggesting prices were, well, on the overbought regime. And with some geopolitical tensions and policy uncertainty, the sentiment changed and the trend reversed and EUAs started to drop. To paint the picture of the specific developments that created this change in sentiment, let me mention a few. So on the geopolitical front, we saw tensions between the EU and the US related to Greenland and the threat of increased tariffs on European goods. So this all raised concerns about weaker trade flows and slower GDP growth in Europe. So very similar to what had happened with tariffs on April 2025. And although these tensions later eased, this episode still left the market sensitive, right? Sensitive to geopolitical risk. Soon after that, we saw also escalating tensions between the US and Iran over nuclear negotiations. This is still a developing situation that is adding to risk sentiment and reinforcing the cautious outlook that we are seeing among participants.
There's also been some recent policy developments. Well, can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, you're spot on, Humberto, because sometimes I find it interesting how just commentary and speculation can drive such a large change in prices in the market, right? So let me give you a little bit of context. We are now in an environment where there is a strong pushback from the industrial sector on EU ETS policy, and this is impacting EUA prices, right? So on the week of February 12th, we saw prices declining sharply, following some comments that were read as bearish signals on the EU ETS. So firstly, we had comments from Peter Lies. Peter Lies is a German member of the European Parliament and also an influential climate policy commentator who was previously involved in EU ETS policymaking. He suggested a possible reduction in the linear reduction factor, which is the annual rate at which allowance supply decreases. He was suggesting to lower it from 4.4% to 3.4%. The linear reduction factor, LRF, currently sits at 4.3%, and it's set to increase to 4.4% between 2028 and 2030, right? So we are talking about at the soonest 2028. And this is a tool that has been set to deliver the GHG reduction goals of the EU. It sets the path to 2039, which is the year at which the auction of EUAs is set to finish, right? To come to a halt. So Lies suggested that this lower LRF could extend the ability of allowances while, and I quote, remaining consistent with the bloc's 2040 climate target, right? The thing is that after these comments, the market dropped 6.4% within 1 day. And also soon after, we had some other comments by Friedrich Merz, Germany's chancellor. I may be stating the obvious here, but Germany represents a country with the largest demand for EUAs in the EU ETS. So whatever Germany's chancellor has to say takes a toll in the market, right? And he first said that the EU ETS should be revised or postponed if it harms industrial competitiveness, which was very unclear because, I mean, the EU ETS has been running for 20 years, so then to postpone it was a bit confusing. But he later clarified that he was referring to the phase out of free allocations. And a few days later, he made further comments calling the EU ETS a tremendous success. So this is all like there's uncertainty in the market, right, related to policy. And then on top of that, we also saw a leaked Directorate General for Climate Action document, which is related to free allowances. This document was outlining the preliminary benchmark updates for 2026 to 2030, and it indicated smaller than expected reductions in free allowance allocation. And this is a big thing, right? I mean, it matters because free allocation directly affects how many EUAs companies need to buy on the market. So smaller than expected cuts mean stronger supply and weaker demand pressure than what has been previously assumed and already factored into the market, right? So what I'm trying to say is that all of these interventions have intensified this short-term bearish sentiment. And well, the result was that EUAs lost more than 15% in the first 2 weeks of February, which was the sharpest decline that we have seen since tariffs last year. And while headlines have driven the sell-off, our analysis indicates that the underlying supply and demand balance remains largely unchanged in the short term. And any potential adjustments, I mean, on the linear reduction factor, on the timing for the phase out of free allowances, all of these things are conversations at this point and speculations, and they would still need approval at the upcoming ETS review. So reducing the linear reduction factor from 4.4% to 3.4% would mostly increase the overall gap, but most of this additional supply would only become available from 2036 and onwards, right? So basically leaving the near-term price fundamentals largely unaffected. Similarly, extending the phase-out of free allowances would reduce the immediate pressure on industrial participants to decarbonize or hedge, and very probably reinforce the short-term bearish sentiment, but without, and this is important, without significantly altering the long-term demand. So what I'm trying to say here is that overall, these interventions have caused a sharp short-term price reaction, but the potential structural impact on EUA supply and demand is quite limited and also gradual. So although our technical analysis is pointing to an oversold market, we think that we still need to see a shift in market sentiment to reverse this price trend that we're seeing.
Oh, very, very interesting. Well, and again, seeing just how all these different factors move in hand with this market, how policy is shaped and driven by certain comments from politicians and policymakers. So it's very interesting to hear your analysis on that, your take on that. And as we look ahead to 2026 and the next coming months, there is an EU ETS review. And I wanted to ask you, what are you seeing ahead this year for EU carbon prices? And what does the EU ETS review mean? And how do you incorporate that into your analysis?
Right. Well, that's a key part of the analysis for sure. So to address your question on the price outlook, I would say that we remain structurally bullish in the medium term, but we put a pin in there because we expect also higher volatility, right? So driven by all of this geopolitical uncertainty and the speculation around policy changes. What is for sure is that emissions cap continues tightening through the linear reduction factor. This is steadily reducing the allowance supply. And with demand expected to exceed supply, we should see upward price pressure in the medium term. But also, there is increasing political and industrial pressure on the EU ETS policy, right? So very recently, we saw Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, making some comments saying that the issue is not climate policy itself, but rather insufficient national support from industrial decarbonization. To add color to this comment, let me say that while the EU control ETS revenues are invested in innovation, member states control about roughly more than half of the EU ETS revenues, and they currently reinvest only a small share in industrial decarbonization. So with all of this speculation and policy uncertainty impacting the market, the changes in the EU ETS review, as you're saying, will be key to see how the supply and demand is modified. The key date is Q3 2026, which is when the review will take place or is set to take place. This review aims to align the carbon market with the EU's 2040 climate targets, while also protecting EU industry. It will address several structural elements, for instance, integrating carbon removals, expanding the system to new sectors such as waste, and also expanding the scope of aviation and maritime, addressing carbon leakage risks beyond the CBAM, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism that just started on January 2026. Reviewing the market stability reserve, which is also one of the key policies of the EU ETS, improving the use of the revenues and exploring international carbon market linkages. Yes, exactly. It's a very long list. And I mean, most of these items could potentially modify supply and demand dynamics. So that is why we need to take a close look at it, right? And also, for instance, in some fronts, we may already like have a hint of in which direction the reviews may go. For instance, carbon removals, right? So carbon removals have been recently been recognized in the EU climate law. And this potentially opens the door to negative emission technologies and international credits under the Paris Agreement. But we will need to wait and see whether this gets implemented and how. Looking ahead, to be honest, the only certainty is continued volatility with bullish fundamentals. We still see some length in the market, so further downside corrections are still possible. But on the other hand, any structural reforms will likely take time to implement. And this leaves the bullish fundamental story for 2026 and 2027 largely intact.
Well, thank you, Wella, for going over all of those different factors. It's really exciting to see what's ahead of this year. I feel like every year that I've covered the EU ETS, there's been big stories such as the invasion of Ukraine by Russia in 2022, high energy prices. Now it's turning more towards review. CBAM is now online. Lots of different factors, but especially as we see industry arguing against the weakening of these types of policies. And lastly, Guada, just as we reach the end of the podcast, I also kind of just want to touch on briefly on the UK ETS. The UK has its own ETS since post-Brexit. And over the last year, there has been a warming of relations between the UK and the EU. And officials in both governments have confirmed their intent to negotiate on linking these two markets. How do you incorporate talks between the EU and the UK about linking their systems into your analysis?
Right. Well, that is, as you're saying, I mean, a key piece of the puzzle. And this is the thing we need to keep on our radar when we analyze the UK market. We have seen a very large shift in the behavior of the UK ETS since the EU and UK announced their intention to work towards linking on May 19th last year. We have seen since then that the long-term correlation between EUAs and UKAs has risen very sharply. So on the day of the announcement, the correlation was at negative levels, and it has grown to levels as high as 0.93 in February this year. And it has remained above 0.7 since July last year. So what I mean is that the UK market has largely tracked EUAs, and it's still tracking EUAs, instead of trading on its own fundamentals, with only some brief deviations during moves driven by news. So what this implies as of today is that when geopolitical factors drive volatility in the EU market, UK prices tend to follow, right? So uncertainty and speculation surrounding the linkage is weighing on prices, will probably continue in the short term until we have some visibility on linkage on the EU-UK spring summit that will take place. And any delays or setbacks in these negotiations could pressure prices in the near term. Our analysis is pointing at technical indicators that are starting to suggest that the market is entering oversold territory. But similar to what we are seeing in the EU ETS, we think that a reversal in the price trend will be subjected to a shift in market sentiment. And in this case, both related to what EUA price trends are and also with any news on linkage. So yeah, we're keeping a close eye at what is happening over
Very,
there.
very interesting, Guada, and really cool to hear about your analysis regarding these two different markets, the factors that drive them, and also just seeing what's ahead of what could be a very, and already has been an exciting 2 months in terms of price volatility. Guada, I want to thank you for being on our podcast today, for joining us and giving us a much deeper insight into the EU carbon market and the UK carbon market. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you, and we'll be in touch as we go over the news, the cycles that drive this market and any other movements. But thank you again, Wada.
Thank you, Marta. It's a pleasure. Muchas gracias.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.